If you have interest in hearing how a guy in his mid-20s breaks into the big boys club and networks with the players that are actually getting it done, you are going to want to hear what David Toopin has to say. David knew in his gut that he would be successful, but he also knew it would probably come from a non-traditional route. He believed in himself. He surrounded himself with highly successful people, and then he took massive action. This guy is an inspiration to so many people out there. If you are looking for an example of hard work, passion, confidence, and persistence, this is the example you are looking for. On to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on David Toopin before we start the show. David grew up in Michigan. His father was a dentist, and he grew up as the middle child in between two sisters. He started a landscaping business at the age of 13. He graduated college with a finance degree, but always knew he would go the entrepreneurial route. David is 25 years old and has already closed on 8 multifamily deals for over 900 units. He has a goal to add on another 1,000 units in the next year, and another goal to grow his net worth to over $10 million in the next 2 years. He wants to do all of this and maintain a focus on helping and inspiring others. Now, onto the show. Hello, everyone. I've got David Toopin here with us today. David, appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. So David and I know each other. We actually connected first through social media, through Instagram. We also connected over Facebook and kind of watched each other as, just as social posts come out and whatnot. And this guy is in his 20s. I don't know exactly how old he is. I'll ask him in a minute. But he's a young guy and he is killing it. He's just put himself out there and he's doing a fantastic job of getting into the right positions with the right partners and putting himself out there and making a name for himself. So with that, David, just at a high level, you know, how many properties are you in and how many deals have you guys syndicated?
Yeah, so number of deals, I think I'm up to 8 now, 8 or 9. As a primary sponsor, GP, a little under 900 units.
That's 4 years. Crazy. And I mentioned that you were in your 20s. How old are you?
I'm 25. I just turned 25 last week.
25 years old, guys. There's no excuse for it. So we first connected over social media. And then, you know, I wanted to have David on the show, but I wanted to get to know him a little bit better too. So he's in the Austin area. And so I decided to mix a little business with pleasure and I rented a big bad Harley and drove down to Austin to meet with David. And it was great because when we met up, he not only showed up, but he also brought his business partners with him. And so we had a fantastic meeting and I could vouch for he pulled up in that sweet red convertible Corvette that you may have seen on social media. So it is real. I saw it.
It's real. It's not rented.
Right. Exactly. So where are you from?
So I'm from Michigan. I grew up born and raised in the suburbs of Detroit, Metro Detroit.
Okay. So did you start investing in real estate in Detroit?
Not in actually the city of Detroit. Something I'd probably never do, but out in the suburbs, it's a lot different. I'd say it's actually very similar to like Dallas suburbs where I was investing. Okay. From the A minus areas to the C areas, it's kind of a similar type of market there. So you know, my first couple of deals, you know, I started in that C minus type product. And
yeah. So help me understand, like, did you go to college?
I did. I went to college, barely.
Okay.
I went, but you know, actually going to class was less frequent. I got a degree in finance.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I started off like pre-dentistry. I thought I wanted to be a dentist. And then,
holy cow, you do not seem like the dentist guy.
No, my dad's a dentist. And so that's kind of why I originally went into it. But I was always, since I was 13, I was starting businesses. So business was the way for me.
Fantastic. So you graduated college with a finance degree, and then did you start to work for another firm, or did you go right into real estate?
So it was my junior year. I did some internships in investment banking. I worked for Big Four Consulting for 6 months too. I took some semesters off to do some internships, and just worked a lot, saved up some money. And, during that time I'd started listening to podcasts, reading books. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. One of the partners at one of the firms actually owned multifamily. And I approached him saying, hey, I want to buy apartments at some point. Like, can you help me figure out this number side of things? And so I came to him with a spreadsheet I built, and he helped me look at some numbers on his properties and stuff. So the last day of my internships, I got some job offers. I actually turned them all down on the spot because I already knew I wanted to go into real estate. So, a lot of people said I was crazy, but I went right into it. My end of my junior year in college.
That's fantastic. One thing that you said, which I think is key, is that, you know what, you found somebody that had already done it, right? And then you went and it grabbed a hold of you, and you went and said, look, you've done it. How do I do it? Right. So did you end up just getting some quick conversations, education with him that pointed you in the right direction? Or did he actually mentor you, and did you end up partnering with him on any deals?
No, it was mainly like quick conversations. The stuff he owned is just he just owned it on his own. Some small, I think he owned like maybe like 40 or 50 units. And so, he knew I was a really hard worker as an intern. And so he ended up taking a couple hours, just walking me through numbers, showing me some financials and stuff, and just teaching me a little bit. But beyond that, I just kind of went back and kept doing my thing and kept looking at deals and talking to brokers and stuff. After that,
how did you have the capital to invest at that stage in your life?
Capital was non-existent. I was sitting on like maybe
I'm five a college grand. Student, right? Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I'm paying my meal plan and like paying rent and trying to pay my car payment, and it's I had no money, I had zero.
So what were you thinking?
I was thinking that I was going to get somebody else's money and fund the deal. And I was going to take a piece of equity for putting it together. And honestly, this is 2016. This is before, I mean, syndication has been a thing for a long time, right? It didn't just show up, but it has exploded in the past 3 to 4 years. From when I started, I mean, I maybe knew of like one book about it and maybe a podcast or two. And, now it's just so widely spread, syndication. So back then it wasn't, I kind of just stumbled into it because I didn't have any money.
Well, I mean, but what you did have was you had some cojones. you were a young guy who believed in yourself, that you actually believed that you could find some other people that you can convince that it's in their best interest to partner with you and put up the capital. And, you know, there's not a lot of people at your age that believe that much in themselves that, you know, they can go out and attract that. So that's pretty awesome that you were able to come with that mindset.
To be honest, I mean, nobody was going to work harder for the money than I was. I mean, nobody had more to prove or more time to put into it. You know, I don't have kids or a family. Like this is what I've got. This is my thing.
Right. Right.
So nobody had more to prove.
So the first partner that you partnered with, talk to me about, you know, how that came about and what that deal looked like.
So first deal, it was 12 units. Well, before that, a little failure. I had like a 44 unit under contract, fell apart. Then went back to the drawing board. I got two 12 units under contract at essentially the same time, two different brokers, same street. So they're like a block away from each other. And I had a guy locally, I was doing some wholesaling with him, and he flipped a lot of houses. So he had enough balance sheet to sign on the loan. So he did that. And then pretty much went out and raised, I think between the two is like a little over $300,000. You know, I didn't really start raising until after I had him under contract. So that was a little tough not having any, you know, I didn't have any contacts. I didn't go to family. I didn't, you know, it was all just other small business owners, real estate people locally that I sure. went to and convinced people to put 15, 25, 40, 50K into each deal. You know, that's kind of how it was put together.
Well, that makes sense. So I talk to people, all different age groups. You know, I'm sure you have a ton of people reach out to you on Instagram as well. And, you know, I turned 50 this year, so I'm a little bit older than you are. but when, you know, when I talk to younger people, you know, I wish I had started much younger because there's just so much wealth generation in real estate, and the compounding effect over many years and the tax efficiency is just amazing. I said, but when I talk to these young people, you know, I mentioned that, look, one of the things I did have was I had capital. You know, I had a bunch of money in the stock market that I pulled out and I was able to invest in a bunch of deals.
That's great.
And I had a track record in other businesses, other industries. When you're just starting out in your 20s, I said, the challenge for you is that you don't have that big of a network and you don't have capital, right? Nothing. So you have to leverage, it's a challenge, right? But
time.
You have hustle. You have time.
We have time.
And you have hustle, right?
Yep.
And so the other piece though I mentioned earlier is mindset. You know, there's a lot of people that are younger that feel like they're not worthy, you know, that they can't do it, you know, nobody will take them seriously. But you overcame that in your mind and then you were able to go out and make that happen. So talk to me about how you ended up, you're in the Austin area now. How'd you end up moving to Texas?
Yeah, so I joined Rod Cleef's mastermind, multifamily boardroom. It's like a, you know, real estate multifamily mastermind for high level investors. And I was, you know, the youngest and the probably the smallest owner in the room in terms of amount of doors, maybe one of the smallest at the time. And I met a guy named Glenn Gonzalez, and he was the biggest owner in the room, real cool guy. And we just got along really well. And he was selling off. He had about $250 million portfolio, around 4,500 units here in Texas, mainly. And he was selling it all off, you know, kind of top of the market. They're selling everything. And he's like, you know, I kind of want to rebuild, you know, after this is done. And we got along really well. And he had found a deal in south of Houston, about an hour and a half. In a little tertiary market, and he had me underwrite it. We looked at it together, and he's like, oh, I want to hire you to kind of manage this transaction process. And I was like, well, you know, Glenn, with all due respect, man, I'm not really for hire, but if you want to partner on it, I'll partner with you. And he's like,
good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. And he was like, heck yeah, let's do it. So, you know, I was a minority piece of that first deal, but I put some, you know, I had some of my own money at that point. I'd already done about 120 units on my own. And so, you know, I put some amount of money, I signed on the loan with him. And so he was like, okay, he's got some skin in the game. And, that deal went really well. You know, it's funny. He describes it. I kind of manage the whole transaction process, which is what I'm really good at. And the investors and lining up financing. And he's like, dude, Dave ran circles around me. He loved it. So we really worked well together. And so
that's fantastic.
Yeah. It was really fun. He's a good dude.
So you were still in Michigan at the time.
Yes, I was still Michigan.
So now you do that first deal and you guys decide to, hey, let's do it again.
Exactly. So I think like any business partnership, you know, I've been in a couple of partnerships now, you know, specific deals and businesses in general. And you kind of got to date first, you know, it's like getting married. The partnership's like getting married, honestly. There's a lot of money involved, a lot of assets.
You haven't been married yet.
I haven't been married yet. No, but I.
So yeah. You don't exactly know.
No, no. But it's like dating. It's like, you know, it's like finding a girlfriend. You date her first and then, yeah, I don't exactly know. But but really that's how it is. And so we tried it out first and it went really well. So we're like, okay, let's start a business together. And so I moved down here to Austin where he's based. And now we're all here.
That's fantastic. So you mentioned that you joined Rod Cleef's Mastermind. So mm-hmm. You're a young guy. You've got, you know, a few deals under your belt and you don't have a ton of money, but you choose to invest in a mastermind. Why?
I paid for that on a credit card. I didn't have the money to pay for it.
I mean,
that was before I, it was right. It was like within a month before I closed on my first two deals. And wow. He's like, you got to join us. I was like, I don't, all right, I'm going to figure it out. So I did that. I closed my first two deals and used that acquisition fee to pay off the mastermind.
So why did you do that? Why did you put it on a credit card to invest in this mastermind?
If there's anything I'd learned by that point in my life, it was that knowing the right people will get you anywhere you need to go, especially if you're providing value back to them. And so, I'd already had a lot of good connections and I was like, man, imagine if I was in a room with specifically multifamily investors, how crazy that's going to propel me. And so I was this, like I said, I was the smallest owner in the room. When I joined, I had 24 units. It was awesome being around that group of people. I met some really great people.
I absolutely love that you had the balls to do that, and because, a lot of people will find every reason why not to do, why not to go to conferences, why not to go learn this, and even for myself, like I've been in the loan trading business since 2002 and I have my own business since 2007. I've traded over $4 billion in residential, multifamily, and commercial real estate loans. And I had people that were like, I joined a multifamily mentorship group here in Dallas. And people were like, Darren, man, you already know multifamily. Why are you investing that money? And I'm like, yeah, I know how to trade large portfolios, but I don't know how to buy a large apartment complex. Yep. And be surrounded by like-minded people. And you can't help once you start getting surrounded by those people looking at them and being like, they could do it. I could do it.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, tell me if you didn't think that. You're the youngest guy, you have the least amount of units, but you're in that room and you're looking around and you're like, you know what?
It was dope. It was awesome. I loved it. Yeah. And I mean, 24 months earlier, I was living in a frat house. So it's like, it's like, I just changed my whole network and circle. I moved back home with my parents. I was living, out of my childhood bedroom. And I didn't move out until I'd bought a little over $7 million in property. I was focused, like low cost, keep my costs low and just focus on buying good deals.
Focused and you were willing to sacrifice, right? So that was a sacrifice, which I would say that, the majority of the people that I know have graduated, they get good jobs, they climb the corporate ladder, they make more money. And then every time they make more money, they either buy a nicer car, get a nicer house, go on a nicer vacation, and then even if they're unhappy, they don't have the flexibility to take a chance, to start a company, to invest in real estate, because they keep on upping their lifestyle to their income.
So prematurely. Yeah.
Yeah. So you took a sacrifice by moving back home with your parents.
Yeah.
Were they supportive?
Yeah, they were very supportive, fortunately. I mean, I don't know if they ever knew it would work out or it would go as it has. But they were like, all right, well, if you want to try it, you can always go back and get a job at any point. So, they knew. And I was always, when I was 13, I started my first business. My mom, I had so much energy. I have ADD and mom's like, you need to get some of your energy out. And so, I was never a good student. I never could sit still in class. And so she's like, why don't you mow the neighbor's lawn? And so I did that. And then she's like, she said, oh, one of the other neighbors wants you to do it. And so then I was like, okay, I get this now. I just needed to start talking to myself. And so I started picking up more and more clients. I built a landscaping company. Through high school and did that, from like 13 to 17 and then stopped doing that when I went to college. So just being an entrepreneur is, they kind of knew it was in my blood.
That's fantastic. Now you talked about partners and you talked about dating your partners and getting to know each other. Talk to me about the difference between having a good partner versus a partner that isn't as attractive as you like.
Yeah, I've had both. Somebody I worked with on my first couple of deals did not turn out to be a great partner. And what I learned from that, I think the two biggest things going into a partnership you need to be aligned on. Number one, obviously, is your goal for the company. You can't have different goals for the company because you're both going to be taking actions that lead you in different directions and they conflict. One person's going to be thinking, oh, why aren't you doing this? And they're like, well, because we need to do this to go in this direction. And you're like, well, that's not the right direction. So you need to be on the same page. Your focus needs to be on the same page. You know, we're Obsidian Capital, me and Glenn, and our third business partner, Mike, actually, now who you met.
Right.
You know, we're a multifamily acquisitions development company. And so that's what we do. You know, we're not going out looking for commercial deals or retail and stuff like that. So same page. Second thing, and I think this might actually be more important than the first, is your values. If your values don't align with your business partner at their core, you are not going to have a great long-term partnership. Because once again, if I value relationships over all else and integrity, and I have a business partner that's making decisions that are not reflecting those same values of relationships and integrity, you are going to have problems and you're going to get very frustrated with the things they do and the things they say and the way they maybe rub people right or wrong. So I think, you know, your goals, but your values are almost just important. Your morals, like your character. What type of people are you? You can't have a jackass, shifty salesman partnering with somebody who's, you know, good old, you know, high integrity, relationship type of person. It's just, you know, it's not going to work.
Right. And I could say, I sat down and shared a meal with you guys, and it's evident that you and Glenn, you know, you have a mutual respect for one another. You guys, you know, are, you know, different age groups, but still value each other and what each brings to the table. And that's huge, you know, to be aligned in that fashion. So, you mentioned Obsidian Capital, that's the name of your company. Help us understand the roles that each of the partners play.
Yeah. So Glenn's been in the business for about 30 years now. He started as a maintenance man. And anyone listening, you should check out his book. I'll plug it, Maintenance Man, a Millionaire. And
there
so
it is. That's the name of the book, right?
That's the name of the book, Maintenance Man, a Millionaire. Yeah, you can find it on Amazon. Contrary to the title, he's actually one of the most humble people I've ever met in my life. I think it was all the people around him that were like, yo, you should use that as the title. And he's like, I don't know if I want to, but you know, so
he seems like a super nice guy.
Real good guy. And so he is knowledgeable in every aspect. I would say, you know, there's very few people who I can really say are an expert in things, and he's an expert in everything when it comes to multifamily. He's done, you know, 28 deals, full cycle, 4,500 units. He's owned a management company with about 7,000 apartments under management. He's been president of management companies. He's been leasing agents. He's been an on-site manager, regional manager. He's hired hundreds and hundreds of people. I mean, so he's got every single part of the business down. He's worked with family offices, private equity, every type of loan you can imagine. So he kind of bridges the gap, which is great, between me and the third partner, which is Mike Woodfield, who just came on, Glenn's son-in-law, who worked with Glenn's former company for about 5 years as the main operations asset manager. And so Mike is very good at operations, asset management, managing the construction process, managing the GCs. I am very, very good at getting properties under contract, getting the capital lined up, making sure we close on time, making sure all the pieces are aligned to acquire a property. And then Mike takes over at closing. And Glenn bridges the gap between both of those as a CEO. So it's actually perfect.
Great synergy. And, you know, you rattled off a ton of things that Glenn has done. And I could just speak for being there. Like, he doesn't come across as this looking down, you know, with all that experience. You know, he could look down at people, you know, that are coming up, but he doesn't come across that way at all.
Dude, he is a humble man.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. So, I've had some listeners come back and say, hey, Darren, you've got all these people that have done, you know, crazy, you know, amount of properties and units. And you talk about getting the deals, you know, what about the performance afterwards? So can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the performance on some of the deals after closing?
Yeah, so I've done to date, let's see, 5 full cycle deals. Every deal beat our projections, which is great. I feel like I've been really conservative. And obviously we've had a good market over the past 4 or 5 years. My first two deals, my philosophy, you know, and this is kind of what I determined after the fact, but this is what I actually did, is I don't think, you know, a lot of people want to get in and do their first deal. A lot of times you're not going to have just this grand slam, double your money in 2 years deal, you know, on your first deal. Like those come, but it takes time to find those, right? And so really, if you're being a little bit conservative, go out there and find a deal that makes sense on paper. And maybe like what I did, I self-managed. And instead of charging a 10% management fee, which I probably should have, I charged 4%. And I charged a little lower acquisition fee. And I gave the investors an 8 pref and 80-20 split, right? And so they got a really generous split on the back end. And because of all that, you know, I didn't buy these first two deals at an insane price, but I still got them a really good return. I was hitting, you know, 8-9% cash on cash for them. And, you know, returns were in the mid teens on an IRR basis when I sold them within 2 years. So, the good deal is not great.
Right.
Next deal after that was 96 unit. I bought it for $4.2 million. I sold it for $7 million a year and a half later. I only renovated about 30 units out of the 48 I wanted to. And wow. I sold it and almost doubled investors' money in under 2 years by 18 months. So that was a grand slam.
That was a fantastic one.
Yeah.
I listened to some of the stuff that you put out on social media and you know, talk about how you source some of these deals, because you know I'm involved in a network that most of the syndicators I hang with go after marketed deals, right? Fully marketed deals with through, you know, strong brokers in the DFW marketplace or San Antonio or Houston or in the Texas marketplace. But I remember seeing something where you guys were actually marketing and trying to build relationships directly with property owners and source some of your deals that way.
Yeah, we have a pretty amazing team, and I think systems for acquisitions are strong. So we have a lot of broker relationships. Most of the deals I've done have come from brokers, but off market. I haven't really bought fully marketed. Actually, one deal is fully marketed, but it's really a very tired deal. It's on the market for like, you know, 8-9 months. Not a great broker. And so we bought it and got a good deal because, you know, it was, I think
nobody else was looking at it.
Yeah. Nobody else was looking at it anymore. Yeah. Exactly. But the rest of them, I've gotten two great deals from mailers, and then, cold calling, I've gotten one deal. And then the rest are like, you know, off market broker stuff where they come to us direct and say, hey, I've got a deal. Or they went to maybe 3 or 4 people and we ended up getting a bid on it. So, but in our office, we send out about 500 mailers a week. I bought a machine, you know, it's a couple grand, but it stuffs envelopes. And so we send out mailers every week ourselves, direct to owners. And we have a team of 10 people that cold call owners every single week. And so it's all commission based. You find a deal. I'll bring you in on it and I'll give you a piece of the equity and, you know, a fee. And so I provide them with the list, and their goal is to make 50 to 100 calls a week. So, you know, we're making 500 to 1,000 calls every week, direct to owners. And then I get on a call with them every Monday, and I kind of, you know, coach them a little bit, educate them. You know, sure. these are younger people. A lot of times are people that want to get into the industry, into the business, and you know, they're ambitious and maybe they have a full-time job, but on the side, they want to make some calls to try and get in on a deal. And so we've made thousands of calls, gotten a lot of great leads, and we're really close on a deal right now that we've cold called the owner on. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. So what markets are you focused on?
Mainly major cities in Texas.
Texas. Okay. So all Texas?
All Texas, but mainly major cities. I'm not a huge fan of tertiary markets, to be honest. they scare the shit out of me.
Right. From what perspective? From population growth, from income growth, from being able to find another person to buy the property when you want to sell?
Yeah,
all
personal
of the above.
Experience. Yeah, it's just from my own experience. I mean, that first deal I bought with Glenn, we did really well on. But we sold it, and then, you know, we bought it when it was like 92% occupied. When we closed on the sale, it was 75%, and now that market's at like below 70% occupancy. You know, it's a chemical dependent town. It's called Freeport. And so, you know, we did very well on it, but we got in and out at the right time. We sold that deal within 6 months, actually. That was the fastest.
Holy cow, 6 months?
Yeah, there's a crazy story on that one.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
talk to me about social media. You have really put yourself out there, and I don't know, on Instagram, I think you have like over 70,000 followers, and you know, how do you look at social media?
I love inspiring other people, and I think that there are so many people out there that really want to do what I do and what you do. And, you know, I want to show them that it's possible, but I also want to show them that it takes a lot of hard work, you know? And so I'm trying to kind of just show that story and that journey along the way, like the hustle and the hard work and the, not just the good, but the bad, and show them that, you know, what really that you can create out of nothing, which is what happened. So I do that. It's really a way for me to easily connect with a lot of people. Cause I got a lot of people that hit me up that want, you know, their coaching or mentorship, whatnot. It's really a way for me to mentor like thousands of people at once, but then also grow my brand and bring in, you know, I've raised probably $2 to $3 million just in the last 24 months from social media, for deals. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. So social media is more right up your alley. I mean, you grew up with social media, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's what you guys did in school. You know, you all had it. In my generation, it wasn't that way. And, you know, and I only got on Facebook 3 years ago. So,
but you're doing good at it. I like it. You got a good, you got a good presence now. So,
well, thank you very much. Well, it was only because I would invest in going to entrepreneurial conferences, and I kept hearing very successful people say, if you're not on Instagram, you're just dumb.
You're just dumb.
And yeah, I was just That's like, funny. And I thought to myself, man, my kids are like, you know, they started playing with Instagram in their middle school. I thought it was just a little toy app for the kids, you know?
Yeah.
But what I realized is what you said before, is that it's a way to inspire other people and to educate other people that you wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. So, you know, I live in the North Dallas area. You live in Austin. If we didn't have social media, we would be resigned to just people that we physically met.
Yeah.
But social media allows us to talk to and educate more people about what we did and share that with other people, which I think is amazing. But I didn't think that, you know, prior to three years ago.
It's crazy. Yeah. And I've met some of my closest friends now, you know, as my circles changed even more and more. And, you know, all my friends now really are people that do what I do and inspire me. I like to be around people that inspire me as much as I inspire them. And so I've met a lot of them through social media. And that's been really, really cool.
That is very cool. So there's something, and I haven't even talked to you about this. I didn't talk to you about it when I was in Austin, but you're involved with something called Secret X event, which seems very, very exclusive.
Yeah.
You know, talk to us about what is that?
It is. Yeah. So it's a secret. Yeah. I can't tell you. No. So it's basically like a networking travel event mastermind type of thing. And so it came from my buddy, and I, and now it's, you know, a group of four of us. And, you know, he owns a bunch of franchises and apartments. I met him at an event and we got along really well. His name's Kevin Easterly. And we started this Facebook page. We got a couple thousand people in it. And then we're like, man, why don't we get like a bunch of cool people together and go to Cabo? And so we planned this trip to Cabo with like 25 people. Basically, you know, we just charge people like at cost, but we're like, hey, why don't you just PayPal us or Venmo us, you know, $2,500. We got everything planned. Don't worry about it. Just get your flight this day. And in doing that, we didn't even realize that we didn't really tell anybody what they're doing. They were just people that we either had met or people that knew us over social media and they wanted to hang out with us, other entrepreneurs, successful business owners. And they showed up and they're like, what are, you know, this is awesome. We're here. What's going on? What's the plan? And we're like, oh shit, we forgot. We didn't even tell people what's happening. We're just like, we just impromptu plan this. And so we get there and we're like, man, this is kind of cool. Nobody knows what's going on. So we call it Secret X, kind of like Secret Experience. And basically it's a business networking event. We tell people the location, not even until like after they've already, applied and said they want to go. Then we tell people the location. We basically tell them where to book their flights and that's it. And you show up and we've got, you know, a boutique hotel booked, everything, events. We had like 150-foot yacht one time. And so now we've done Cabo, Aruba. We're going to Jamaica next month, which awesome. Or in November. So just twice a year type of networking thing that we do.
That's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
And that exclusive kind of mystique to it, yeah. You know.
You should come to the next one. You'd be a good fit. Rod Cleef's coming to this one. I've got a pro NBA, former NBA player, really? Kevin Bupp's coming. He's got the Mobile Home Park podcast. Yeah, a lot of cool people.
Well, I might be, this is, you know, where mindset comes into play. I'm thinking to myself, this guy doesn't want to invite a 50-year-old. He wants to hang with all his millennial buddies.
Dude, it's all over the board. No, you probably wouldn't be the oldest person there. So, you know, it's a good group. Rod Cleef will take that one. No.
All right, good. So we'll talk about that after the show for sure. So why multifamily? You know, real estate, there's a ton of different asset classes. Like, why did you pick multifamily?
I have an uncle who's big into commercial, like big box development and stuff. And so I was like, oh, that's really cool. I thought, you know, maybe that's the way to go. And I remember talking to him. He doesn't really like to talk about it too much, real estate stuff.
Why does he not want to talk about it?
Very, very successful. But I just, you know, I don't know. He'd kind of given me some advice along the way. I remember like, he was the first person that ever told me, David, in real estate, you make money when you buy. And at first, like, I didn't really get it, but then like, I got it after that, right. You know, it made sense. And so things like that. But, I think it was like, he owned a lot of stuff with family and it didn't end up going so great in the end.
Oh,
but,
gotcha.
But so, you know, he doesn't really get it. He's never invested with me, but
I think there are some people that are a little gun shy about telling family and friends because there's risk, right?
Sure.
And my wife said the same thing to me when on the first syndication, she was like, don't present it to friends and family.
Sure.
And I'm like, why? Well, what if it doesn't go right? And I'm like, I'm just not wired that way. Look, if we're going to put money into the deal, I think it's a great deal.
Yeah, no, for anybody. Like,
why would I not at least present the opportunity? Sure. Like they don't have to, they say, no, I just move on to the next person. But like, why do I want people just from my multifamily group to benefit and not help other people? But there, I have met people like your uncle, you know, was it your uncle you said?
It's my uncle. Yeah. And you know, the type of people that, you know, they don't even have a Facebook or really, you never know about them, but they own, you know, 20 million square feet of commercial, $1 billion
super,
of real estate.
Super like, wealthy.
Yeah.
But they, for some reason, are either fearful of, you know, hurting, you know, somebody else, or they just are not interested in going through the education process.
Exactly. And it was okay. But, he always gave me advice if I asked, but it wasn't, but I also didn't want to go to family at first. He hasn't invested in my deals. I don't ever expect him to, but, I didn't go to family at first anyways. In my first couple of deals, I wanted to prove it to myself. Like, you know, I didn't have to,
Good for you, man.
Yeah. So,
well, with some of these deals, I'm like, you better contact me on some of these deals with these returns that you've got. So,
yeah.
Hey, you mentioned you developed a spreadsheet. I think that we talked about you might be starting some kind of software deal. Help me understand what that's all about.
Yeah. So kind of in the beginning when I mentioned I met with that partner at that firm, I built a little spreadsheet and I went to him. I was like, hey, what do you think of this? You know, because when you do investment banking, you're playing in spreadsheets all day, probably 80 hours a week. And so it just kind of evolved over time. And every time I found something new that was like, hey, I want to add the ability to refinance and make it easy for myself to calculate, you know, what's it going to look like with a new loan any number of years in that you want to choose. And so I would just build it and build it and build it for myself, really. And then at some point, this was maybe like a year and a half ago, somebody approached me and said, hey, can I buy that from you? I'll pay you, you know, $250 if you give me a copy. And it's like, all right, sure. And so I ended up putting it on my website and starting to talk about it a little bit, and just kind of word of mouth, I've sold almost $100,000 worth of a spreadsheet in the last 2 years. Yeah.
Fantastic.
A lot of people buy it. You know, they switch over from the less useful Michael Blanc's spreadsheets of the world and the, you know, other people's spreadsheets that I really think are just a little cluttered and not as user-friendly. And so, you know, I get a lot of people switching over from other ones and they love it. So I really had always wanted to turn it into software, not just a spreadsheet. I think Excel is dated in a way. I think, you know, I think there's more things you can do with software than you can do with Excel. Really, a lot of people don't end up getting into the business because of Excel in a lot of ways. It's either they're not familiar enough with it, they're not an analytical type person. And so that's kind of a barrier to entry for a lot of people, that the analysis process. Right. So I wanted to solve that. So I started a company called Real Estate Lab. I just finished $1 million angel round of funding for the company. And I'm about halfway through the process. It's going to be another 6 months to build out the actual software. And I'm going to launch Q1 of next year. It's going to be a multifamily specific acquisitions platform. Track all your deals, underwrite online in the spreadsheet, upload your T12s, rent rolls. It'll automatically read the data, pull it out, put it in the analyzer for you. You know, make assumptions, send LOIs.
All web-based?
All web-based, cloud-based, yep.
And what about, does it include like all the documents you have to sign when you're signing up as a passive investor?
No, it's not for investors. It's not for passive investing right now. It's okay. Really just for
the acquisitions process,
underwriting the deal, tracking your pipeline of deals, sending offers, sharing the deal, generating financial reports based on your underwriting. And eventually you'll be able to finance deals right through the platform. And more. So
you mentioned the spreadsheet that's available today, and you said the first copy somebody bought it for $250. Is that what you sell it for? Is $250?
Yeah, it's still $250 for that. I have a free one on my website too.
I mean, I don't know, but like there are so many other programs out there that are, you know, you don't get access to the spreadsheet unless you join a program. And then here's an ability. There's certain people that, you know, they don't have the capital to do that, but they hear, I need to underwrite deals. I need to underwrite deals. I need to underwrite deals, but they don't have the starting point. You know, $250 is extremely reasonable for somebody to invest in and start, you know, underwriting deals in their market. I don't know the answer to this. So I probably shouldn't ask you, but I'm going to anyway. Does it come with any kind of like example so that they can kind of copy a, you know, a deal example so they could use that as a sample?
Yeah, I have a PDF that walks you through how to use it. And then I have probably 4 or 5 videos on my YouTube channel where I literally, it's like an hour or two walking through step-by-step how to use it. So it's the easiest way to get in and start actually analyzing deals.
That's huge. Yeah. And that's a very low cost to get in. Yeah. So,
and the software will replace that come 6 months from now. Yeah.
That'll just be a piece of it. And then it'll have other components that are latched on top of it.
Correct. Yep. There'll be a lot more to it. Yep.
So talk about, you know, your childhood. I know you talked about a little bit, you know, you started companies, you know, as a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old. You know, you grew up in Michigan. Were you an only child? Did you have brothers and sisters? You know, were you wealthy, not wealthy? You know, kind of what was your upbringing?
Yeah. So I grew up, I have two sisters, one older, one younger. So I'm the middle.
Middle child, getting in trouble with
middle child. Yep. Man, I was always that hyperactive kid. I never got into too much trouble, you know, always getting into trouble a little bit in school and stuff. And I could never sit still. I was always really like really active, always had to be doing something. And I think that's part of what really drives me in entrepreneurship. I always felt like as a kid, you know, being reflective back on what it was like, I always felt like I always had a different opinion from everyone else. Like everyone would tell me not to do something or don't do it that way. And then I would do it that way and it would end up working. And I feel like it's kind of like a lot of entrepreneurs, right? We clash with the typical, I don't say average, but the average mindset. Right. And so, I really realized that more and more. I've always thought really differently than people. And I think I always was told that it was not a good thing, but by teachers and whoever, but friends, but I think it's been a blessing in the end. It's been a good thing.
Absolutely.
It's a great thing.
Right. Coming up, everybody wants you to be a conformist, right? I mean, your parents yep. want you to listen the minute yeah. they tell, look, I'm a parent now and I still you want know. My kids to listen to me. Mm-hmm. You know, teachers, coaches, et cetera, but having that outside of the box thinking is key when you're trying to start something new and create value from nothing. Agreed. So when you were younger, was there ever a time where you thought to yourself, I'm going to be successful? And can you picture that? And how would you define it back then? You know, how paint that picture?
All the time. Yeah. I just figured there's no way I won't be successful. Like I almost didn't picture it in my mind. Like I picture in my mind being able to do it one day, like whatever I want, whenever I want, like money not being an issue. And that's not how I was raised. You know, I wasn't born with the silver spoon at all. I was, you know, bought my first car. My parents put me to work, like I said, when I was 13, you know, stuff like that. But I grew up well off. My dad was a dentist and, you know, I went to a Catholic family. Went to Catholic school, kindergarten through 12th grade. You know, I definitely have a good family. They're good people. I was raised with good values. I think that's why, you know, integrity is so important to me. Right. And just respecting other people, building really good relationships. So I think, you know, all that were just good values I got from my family. But you know, the whole, it was difficult to break the traditional mold still of, you know, get a job and kind of conform, right? I think that's sure. still for 99% of people, that's how it is. And so I really had to push outside of that for sure.
That's awesome. So did you ever, I'm just curious, have that red convertible Corvette as one of your goals that you were shooting for as a young kid?
No, honestly, I didn't know. I never thought I'd buy a Corvette. I just hadn't really thought about it at all. And I wanted to buy, I moved here to Austin. I was like, oh, I want to buy a sports car. It's something I couldn't have done back in Michigan, right? Where you only get to drive it for like 5 months out of the year. And so I was driving to Houston actually to tour. We were touring a deal and my buddy works for me. He was in the passenger seat looking up some cars for me while we were driving and showing me some stuff. And he sees this Corvette on his phone and he looks to the right and we drive on the highway past the dealership and see the Corvette in the parking lot outside the dealership. And I was like, dude, that's a sign. You just saw it at the same time you were looking at it on your phone. Like it must be a sign. So we went back there at the end of the day when we got back from Houston and I was just like, I'm just going to take it. We'll just buy it on the spot. So done. So nice. Game over. Yeah.
Good for you, man. So where have most passive investors come from you? Like you mentioned social media, you mentioned and some of your earlier deals that you didn't want to go to friends and family. Where have you found most of your passive investors for your deals?
Yeah, at first it was just pounding the pavement, like every person I could meet asking for referrals. And then it kind of spider webs a little bit, right? You get one person in, it goes well, they tell their friends. And so I'd say now it's pretty evenly split between people I meet in person, new contacts, relationships. The next part would be, people that sign up on my website, and a lot of them come through podcasts. I think I've done a little over 100 podcasts in the last year and a half. The rest of them are from social media.
Awesome. Awesome. Talk about fear, man. You don't sound like you're somebody that lets fear get in the way, but I know that, you know, even the challenging things that I've gone through, I was scared, but I pushed myself to do it anyway. Talk to us about a time where you were afraid, but you did it anyway. And how'd you kind of push yourself through that?
Yeah, I think we're just talking in general, like getting started in this. I don't think I had any fear. I was like, I think I was almost too naive and too young to know what the risks could be. And so I just went in head first and had, you know, probably had to build up my confidence a little extra, but, you know, I think that's kind of how I took it on at first. I don't really have any financial fears, to be honest. I think most of my fears are like fear of regret. Like I don't want to go through life and have any regrets later on. So that's why I'm going all out now. I don't want to, you know, I'm afraid of not being loving to my family and one day they're not there and, you know, then I don't have the chance to do that anymore. I think more things like that. So I love like putting it all on the line, being a good person, and really, you know, how you do everything is how you do everything. So.
Absolutely. Well, you're one of the few that I've talked to that has had no fear. and it reminds me of like, you know, I don't know if you played football, but football, you know, some of the younger guys, they could excel because they were trying to prove themselves. And like you said, head first, they would just sacrifice their body every way they could to try to prove themselves. And then as you know, you climb the ladder and you were, you know, junior, senior year, as a senior, you know, you're not playing in college. Right. And so maybe all of a sudden you're starting to be like, well, I don't want to get hurt. Right. Yep. When you're a freshman or sophomore, sure. you really aren't thinking that, you know,
no, you're not.
So maybe later on in life, you know, when you're past your mid 20s, you'll see a little bit of fear.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in too deep about, you know, we're still in the middle of this COVID crisis. I don't want to get too deep in COVID, but, you know, we're about to come off the 4-month, moratorium on rental evictions and there's, you know, big question mark in terms of what the next stimulus package might look like, but, you know, coming out from the government, it seems a little bizarre to me that like we have all these unemployed people, but the stock market keeps going up and multifamily.
It is bizarre.
Went on hold. Yeah. It went on hold for like 2 months, but now it started, you know, reselling and it's reselling at pre-COVID levels, which it just seems to me like there's a lot more, unpredictability in terms of the future and some of that predictability should be priced into assets and into the stock market, but it doesn't seem like that is. What's your take on all that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't ignore the facts, right? I mean, I can't go into deals and look at them the same way as I was 6 to 9 months ago, or I guess 7 or 8 to 9 months ago, right? Pre-COVID.
Right.
You just can't do that. And so we're being more conservative with our underwriting, our stress tests, stuff like that, you know, no rent growth first year or two, higher, you know, expecting higher vacancy, higher economic vacancy, and really accounting for the changes in financing, which is one of the big changes. But, you know, in general, our properties have done really well the past couple months, you know, and a lot of that, I guess, is certainly thanks to stimulus money, Uncle Sam throwing checks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I I feel like, you know, I don't know what the next stimulus package is going to look like, but I do know that most of the tenants at the properties that I own are still working. That we don't have any properties where there's like a nearby factory shutdown or something that left half our tenants unemployed. So I think we buy in areas where there's, you know, larger markets where it's a diverse enough economy and workforce base so that I'm not as concerned about that. I think that's why, you know, it's one of the reasons why I told you earlier, I don't like tertiary markets because you just never know right. what's going to happen. There's right. one big business there that goes down. I mean, you know, that could take your property down with it. And so we're baking in big rainy day funds. And I still think that there's always good deals to buy out there. I've pivoted a little bit and said, you know, there's about 400 units we're under contract on right now. And instead of buying them, we are flipping some of them. One's a portfolio, one's a big property in Fort Worth. And those are decisions that we made just because, you know, sometimes that short-term money is better than taking the risk. And if people sure. are willing to pay the high prices, and why not? And so we kind of got offers that we couldn't refuse. And that's why we ended up doing that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, one of the things that through this process that I've started thinking about more and more is that, you know, different markets could benefit. And I think that Texas is one that could definitely fall into that camp. If you, you know, think about what happened and more people working at home and more people looking at like their cost of living. And look, if I'm, you know, in California and I moved to Texas and I'm still able to work from home, I could save that much more money. Yeah. And companies thinking the same thing, like, hey, look, we have all these people at home. Why not move the office from California or New York and move into Texas? So it could be an additional boom to, you know, states like Texas and Arizona and Florida and the Carolinas that you know, have a lower cost of living could benefit from other areas, people moving out. But, you know, time will tell, I guess.
I think everything is affected in this country right now. There's not a single thing that's not affected. Maybe not Amazon, right? But, you know, they're affected in certain ways. They've had to probably establish new procedures and policies around their workforce and whatnot. So everyone's affected. And the way I look at it is, what am I buying and how resilient is it to change? And I think that's part of the reason why I got into multifamily in the first place is, and not, you know, not commercial, because it's very resilient. Everyone always needs a place to live. I'm not doing class A, I'm doing class B, B minus type product where the rents are 800 to 1200 bucks a month, 800 to 1300 bucks a month. And it's there's always a pool of people that need to live in places like that in the areas that I buy. And so I look at it that way. You know, we're like I said, we're particular on the markets we buy in, the type of properties we buy in, quite frankly, also the price we pay. We're very conservative. So I think that's why I've been fortunate and our deals have done very well. And we're not, you know, hurting right now in any way. And so, you know, I think some people may have gotten a little too aggressive over the last year or two and they're not in the same position because of that. And there were a lot of high prices that were paid for properties. We went almost 12 months without buying a property from April, you know, late spring 2019 to early 2020, didn't buy a single property because I had made over 100 offers. I mean,
and that could be difficult because you have, once you start building up an investor, you know, database, that your investors are like, when's the next deal? When's the next, like,
oh, yeah, they want all the time.
They want to put more capital to work because you made them money. You've doubled their money. So now it puts pressure on you to find the next deal. But if you can't find the right deal,
just tell them, sit back and wait. You know, the next deal that's going to come from us is a good deal.
That's good.
Because it's not, you know, I don't do deals just to do deals. I don't do deals for fees. I invest in every single deal that I do. And I'm sometimes the biggest investor in the deals we do, quite often, actually.
And so
with that said, I'm not going to do a deal that I wouldn't personally invest in. And a lot of investors are really close friends. And so I'm very, very careful with the deals, you know, and so is Glenn. We're very careful with the deals that we put in front of them. And so if they have to wait a little longer and they put their money somewhere else, that's okay with me. All I know is the next deal that comes from us is going to be a, a slamming deal. It's going to be good.
Another confident statement from David Tupin.
That's how.
Hey, so what do you like to do outside of work?
Oh man, I love traveling. I feel like I travel quite a bit. I love going out on the lake, wakeboarding, jet skiing.
Actually, I've seen a bunch of stuff out with you out on Lake Travis, right?
Yeah, they're all the time. Yeah, all the time. So love being outside, in summer, and I love traveling. I have a girlfriend, so we hang out with other friends, people that are doing this. But honestly, I work a lot. I work 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and I love it. I love what I do. I have fun every day. I wake up excited. And so it's a cool business to be in.
Fantastic. What's kind of the next big stretch goal for you?
Next stretch goal, like personal?
Yeah. Look, I mean, you got into big multifamily. You're in it now. You got a great partner,
Yeah.
You go after things that most kids your age, I say kids, mid 20s for me, you're a kid, but most guys, they can't fathom what you've already accomplished. Now, how do you up the bar on yourself?
Yeah, I'd like, my personal goal is next 24 months, I want to have a $10 million net worth. And so I think a lot of that comes into play with this software and continue to do, good deals, bigger deals. I want to do larger deals. We're looking at 550 units right now that we're pretty close on. Stuff like that. So probably I'd say another, at least this year, at least in the next 12 months, at least another 1,000 apartments bought. And then I'd like to invest, over the next year as well, about $1 million. So into different various deals.
Awesome. And you mentioned the software company. So, I mean, you've got the apartments and you've got the software deal, and you've already raised $1 million for the seed capital on that. So
yeah,
you're well on your way. So that's fantastic. Hey, if somebody was to ask you, David, like, hey, I'm new in the space. It sounds awesome. How do I get involved as a passive investor? How do you, what do you tell them?
Yeah, best way is go to my website, obsidiancapitalco.com, and you could register there on our platform and set up a call with me. If you want to hit me up directly too, you can go to my Instagram page at Real Estate Jedi, send me a direct message. I try to respond to everybody. And then, you could also email me, david@obsidiancapitalco.com.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on. Once we stop recording, I'm going to ask you more about that secret mystery event. I think that you are an inspiration to you're an inspiration to, for sure, your generation, to prove that you can get it done, in your 20s. Now, I would say that, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, anybody that I talk to that's younger, even if they're older, anybody that's trying to break in the space, I tell them, you have to partner with somebody that already has done it. And so finding an experienced partner is key to get into the large multifamily space. And you went from being a little guy and then you partnered with the big guy. So that's fantastic. Appreciate you coming on. Look forward to seeing what you have going on next. And listeners, I really hope that you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.